The Low Post is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. And don't forget to download and subscribe to Fantasy Focus Football with Matthew Berry, Field, Yates, and Stefania Bell. They'll get you set for the push toward your fantasy football playoffs with waiver wire targets, weekly rankings, injury news. You can find Fantasy Focus Football wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast on a Thursday afternoon, a beautiful fall Thursday afternoon, where we are going to get some news in the next 24 to 48 hours about the NBA season. And we also got some news about Jrue Holiday being semi-available in trades. And to help us break it all down, our one and only insider, Mr. Bobby Marks. How are you doing?
Hey, Zach. How are you?
How am I?
Is that a loaded
question? How am I? Let's put it this way. Someone texted me this morning about Giannis Antetokounmpo and the likelihood he would sign the Supermax or some such thing. And the text was like, what do you think GA is going to do? Like capital G, capital A. And I was like, GA, well, you know, it's going to be a close race. It's going to seem like it's going to come down to the wire. You know, I just like, it's just my brain's all screwed up, you know, whatever.
I know. We're thinking Georgia and he's thinking Giannis.
Anyway, so, I mean, the union is going to have its player representatives vote tonight on the NBA's desired calendar for the season and a very complicated escrow system that, truthfully, I don't want to get into. No offense. I know you like the escrow system. I've never used the word escrow so much in my entire freaking life. All indications are the representatives who, after each of them consults with their teams, will vote yes. There will not, as I understand it, be a body of a vote of the full player body. If that happens, they still have to sort out the cap and the tax and all these other things. But it appears that we are on track for a December 22nd start and a wild next whatever amount of weeks to get there. Is there any reason not to believe this is true?
No, I think, and you're right, we won't go into the full length of the escrow, but what's being proposed, if it's 18 or 20%, it's a no-brainer for the players. I think that's kind of one of the big sticking points, as well as the start of the season going December 22nd. They're not going to get whacked all at once. It's going to be, spread out over a couple of years. So someone was asked me what percentage would I give it that we're going at December 22nd. I said I would never start at 100, but I think we're probably at like 95%, right? I mean, I think it's just the obvious right now.
Certainly everyone in the league is pretty confident. And look, I mean, the question everyone wants to ask you when something like this happens, it's the same thing that happened when the pandemic, when the bubble restarted, is like, what kind of teams does this benefit? Does this benefit teams with continuity? Does this benefit teams that haven't played in 8 months? Does it benefit the teams that were just playing? Does it benefit teams that won't make a lot of roster changes? And the answer is, I have no freaking idea. Like, this is crazy. All of this is crazy. And it's going to be just sort of random. I don't know.
Well, yeah, because we don't know what the schedule is going to be, right? We don't know if the league is going to give the Lakers a break a little bit. Yeah, of course they would be playing, you know, probably on the 22nd and then on Christmas Day, but then maybe they space games out for them. Maybe we see more teams playing back-to-backs that haven't played since March. So I think what the schedule comes out, and that's another thing, like we still got to get, usually the schedule comes out in August, right? We're going to get everything. We're going to get everything all at once as far as how teams are, how these games are going to be, how they're going to be spaced out and how it's going to impact. I think it's going to be interesting too, is that probably some of the players that were injured, the Ben Simmons of the world that had gotten hurt in Orlando, probably thought they probably had an extra month to recover here.
And Jonathan Isaac.
Yeah. Jonathan Isaac's another one. And where are they going to be? And not probably more Simmons, less Isaac. I think we probably won't see Isaac for a while, but where's Ben Simmons going to be when this thing gets going here?
Well, let's talk about the schedule, actually, because that's interesting. I don't know exactly how it's going to break out, but I would suspect, I mean, all the talk that I've heard from inside every relevant party is we are going to have less travel, more stay in one place as much, you know, and play a couple of games, or stay in the same region and play a couple of games. This is going to be a big deal because, I mean, if you end up playing your own division a hugely disproportionate amount of times, and in some cases that there is still some sort of geographic alignment within divisions, right? It does, like the Atlantic division is all pretty close together. The Central division is all pretty close together. Think about what that team means for a team like Chicago, who desperately wants to get into that playoff race for the eighth seed. And by the way, we could talk about this too. The eighth seed might be the only playoff seed available for all these lower rung Eastern Conference teams. And they get to play the Central Division a whole bunch, which means you get spanked by the Bucks a lot of times. But your Pacers, you can compete against them. Detroit, Cleveland, versus a team like, you know, I mean, all the Atlantic Division teams are going to beat up on each other. So maybe it doesn't really matter that much because the Southeast Division is also not very good. But it could have, like, particularly in the West, too, it could have, and the West is loaded, it could have an impact.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at the, you know, the Clippers, the Lakers, right, Golden State, you know, basically, if you're going to be playing these teams, let's say, six times, maybe even more, there is going to be some disparity. I mean, even Miami in the Southeast, you get Atlanta, Charlotte, and Washington, right? I mean, you can basically kind of feast off them. So it's going to be interesting how the schedule is going to be set. It's hard for me to think that, you know, we're going to get East versus West or a lot of, you know, we're not going to get the normal, you know, two games a year type arrangement here, because what happens if you are a team like Nets and you're out on the West Coast and there's a COVID outbreak, and now and that basically wipes out whatever you have. If it's Portland, if it's the Clippers, if it's Sacramento, if it's Golden State, when are those games going to be, you know, made up down the road here? So I think we're going to get a heavy dose of divisional games. I think we're going to get a lot of focus on conference games. Where is Toronto going to be? Right? Like, that's going to be the interesting thing. Or, you know, where are they going to be playing? Are they going to be in Newark, New Jersey? Because you can get the Sixers, the Nets, the Knicks. You can get Boston. You can get to Washington relatively quick. Are they going to be in Toronto? So I think that's going to be the next big thing as far as figuring out where they are going to be.
It's interesting how going into the bubble, there was so much discussion about parameters, whether this was going to work, how to keep it safe. And now, as the pandemic shows no signs of slowing down, in fact, is getting worse, although there's some evidence, I guess, that the you know, fatality rates and stuff are getting better, there doesn't seem to be as much, like, angst and discussion about, hold up, we're just having, like, a semi-normal-ish NBA season. Like, teams are going to stay at hotels, and we're going to maybe have some courtside fans if we can test them, or some suite fans if we can test them. Like, how is that all going to work? And the NBA, because, again, by the virtue of timing, they've gotten to watch the NFL, they've gotten to watch Major League Baseball, they've gotten to see advances in testing. They've had this there's been this Yale study of basically how the virus spreads, and they've gotten to understand that and learn about it with the Yale scientists they've collaborated with. So they had the advantage of that. But, like, this is still, you know, we just got through the whole bubble where nobody got it. You know, that's going to be you would think, like, the possibility of, like, what you just said, like, what if there's an outbreak? Like, it just feels like no one is talking about this, and that is a reality that may spring up at some point.
Yeah, and I, you know, not to poo-poo what happened in Orlando, because the league spent a lot of time putting that process in the manual and the health and safety protocols together, and there was no positive test here. But now we're, like, you know, you take the bubble away, and now we're entering the real life here.
Regular world, regular life.
You're going to be experiencing what the NFL has been going through, where you'll probably have some teams' facilities are going to be shut down at some point here. You will have positive tests because you are going to be traveling and you're going to be in hotels. You are not going to have that layer of protection. And I think what you'll see is probably when these rules come out, or these revised rules, we're probably going to see the substitute player rule, where you can add based on a COVID positive test here. A little bit different than when the bubble, you know, in Orlando, when it was basically guys just pulling out, and then you can replace an Avery Bradley or a Trevor Ariza. But I think you're going to have some type of taxi squad in case there is an outbreak of positive tests to add, because it's not like this is the NFL and you have 50 players. You got 15 players, right? Like, what happens if there's one and then it's two and then it's three, and it certainly has that domino effect.
I would not surprise me at all if the NBA, again, no one knows where life is going to be in 8 months, you know, 2 weeks, let alone 8 months or whenever the finals is going to be. Would not surprise me at all if they tried to do what baseball did and play the finals in a bubble, and maybe even the conference finals and the finals. Now, that's a complicated negotiation with the players, who understandably do not want any part of a prolonged bubble experience again. It was really hard. Some of them talked about it openly, some of them didn't, but it's hard to be away from your families. It's hard to be isolated in any place like that, no matter the amenities. But again, depending on how things go, would not surprise me if that was something that the league tried to get done.
Yeah, and where are we going to be in May and June, right? I mean, we're all living day to day right now. So how do we project out, 8 months from now? So I'm sure that will certainly be something of discussion if we get to a point and there's no vaccine in place, and this virus is still has a lot of legs, and we are trying to, save the back end of the season here.
The Low Post fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite The Low Post episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like First Take and Pardon the Interruption ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/low. That's amazon.com/low to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because of the eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's switch gears and use Drew Holiday as a reason to continue talking about what promises to be an absolutely bonkers offseason. It was reported yesterday in The Athletic that, I don't really think this was news, frankly, but that the Pelicans are kind of listening on Drew Holiday. And, look, there are a bunch of teams who could use him, a bunch of teams who have inquired who probably don't have the ammo to get him. Drew Holiday is really good. He's on a $26 million semi kind of expiring, probably expiring contract. He's 30 years old. He's a really good two-way player. This could be the first domino to fall in the offseason, or one of the first big dominoes to fall. I think there's going to be a bunch of teams that try to get in on this, but what were your first thoughts when you heard this news? Who are some of your favorite Drew Holiday teams?
Yeah, no, I wasn't surprised at all, just because it's just the nature of the beast in the NBA. When you have a player that's kind of going into that expiring contract, although he's got a player option, on a team that's, is a young team, non-playoff team right now, it's, you basically have to make a decision if you're David Griffin, or you could just let it play out, right? Is he worthy of an extension, locking him up long term? How does he fit with your new coach and Stan Van Gundy? Or are you looking to maximize as much value as possible? So, and he's a heck of a player. I mean, you add all that up in there and you have to look at what the options are. I mean, nobody, unless you're LeBron and, Kevin Durant, or I guess Kawhi, like, there's no untradeable players in this league. You take the call for everyone here. So, you wrote about, Denver was fascinating, is a fascinating place, because what are they going to do with Michael Porter Jr., right? I think if Michael Porter Jr. was in play and you have the contract of Gary Harris, does that interest you if you're New Orleans, right?
If Michael Porter Jr. is in the deal, A, I will be absolutely blown away.
Yep.
And B, the Pelicans should and probably will say, yes, thank you very much, let's make the deal happen. I do not think the Nuggets are putting Michael Porter Jr. on the table for anybody who might become realistically available in the next 8 months or whatever, other than Bradley Beal. I think Michael Porter Jr. is the Bradley Beal trump card. I don't know that they'd even put him in for Bradley Beal. I don't think that's a no-brainer for them. But if and when it comes down to it, I think that's the asset that trumps everything. I think, frankly, let's just say Bradley Beal walked into Tommy Shepard's office tomorrow and said, I want to be out of here. I think Michael Porter Jr. trumps the number one pick in the draft. Like, I think he's the trump card that probably, I mean, I'm sure there's something realistic that could beat it that I'm not thinking of, but I don't know what it is.
No, you're right. I mean, if you were Minnesota right now, I mean, this is just hypothetical. It's like, you know, would you trade the number one pick for Michael Porter Jr.? You'd be like, yeah, I think I would. Based
that's
on
interesting.
Where,
I didn't think. Where, I mean, that's not a thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's another way to look at that. It, right? It's just another way of looking at it. So I think Denver is a fascinating team, and so if you take Porter Jr. out, what do you have left? Right. So now you're looking at besides your picks, which will probably be in the 20s, you've got Will Barton, who's got a player option for 21-22, and
that's an interesting one. Everyone pencils in Gary Harris as the piece, and I get he's younger, so I get it. He's also coming off two just what the hell happened kind of seasons. Like, why not Will Barton? I mean, I think if I were for David Griffin, I might also prefer Gary Harris, but Barton's name never comes up. I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably Barton is just – I mean, Harris is just because of his salary, his number, right? I mean, I think you're when you're trying to match up the numbers here. But I think if I am New Orleans, you know, you basically go to the list and you rank as far as what the best asset and best player is going to be. And I think for me it would probably be – I would probably prefer Will Barton. I know he's coming off an injury compared to where Gary Harris is. So – Denver is an interesting team. Brooklyn, of course, is an interesting team just because they've got Caris LeVert. They've got Jared Allen. You know, they've got their own picks. They've got a Philly pick this year. We'll see what happens with Spencer Dinwiddie, who's got a player option and is likely going to opt out. And I think if you're Spencer Dinwiddie, you probably are looking to maximize your value in 21. So that's another team. That's interesting because if you're New Orleans, Zach, and Brooklyn comes to you with Caris LeVert and, you know, let's say some fillers, what would your response be to that?
Well, let's zoom out first. I do think New Orleans is not bluffing when they say they'd be open to keeping Jrue Holiday, depending on what they can get for him. They're not just going to just trade him for the sake of trading him. Like, I think they legitimately want to get their young cornerstone players, Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram, some playoff experience. And Jrue helps. He's also like just a beloved figure in the NBA. Great locker room guy, great character guy. Everybody loves Jrue. So I don't think if the market reaches like a certain floor, I think they'll just be like, you know what, we'll play it out. Like, even if we're going to lose him in free agency, like, this is just not worth it for us. So that's number one. Number two. About 10, I think it was reported somewhere that 10 teams have already contacted the Pelicans about Jrue Holiday. I bet it's higher than that because you're already seeing, well, can the Lakers get him? Can the Clippers get him? To me, if I had to guess, and we can go through some fake trades, but if I had to guess, if he really becomes available and there's really a trade war for him, I could see it coalescing around three things. Number one, Denver with some package of Gary Harris, Bol Bol, and like two top five protected picks or very lightly protected picks. So that's one. Number two, Brooklyn with Caris LeVert and stuff. Now that stuff could be a player. I like Jared Allen doesn't seem to be particularly appealing to New Orleans with Jackson Hayes there and Zion having to play some center. But Caris LeVert plus something, plus like, let's just put a first round pick in. Like maybe it's lottery protected because you think Caris LeVert is better than Gary Harris. And three, this might be my favorite one. And this leads us into a discussion about the top of the draft. The second pick in the draft, if it happened now, if the second pick in the draft and Andrew Wiggins for Jrue Holiday and the 13th pick in the draft.
For me on that one, that's something that I would consider during the season when I see what that second pick in the draft is.
For both teams?
Yes. It's hard for me. It would be hard for me, based on everything that's going on, to take a swing at number two right now. I want to see where that player is in, let's say, if the trade deadline's in March. I want to evaluate him over the next 3 months. And see what type of player he is. I don't think I can do that right now going into the draft.
So let's stick with the Warriors, though, because everyone's obsessed with the Warriors. I've spent so much time trying to find fake trades for the number two pick, right? Trade backs, trade for stars. And the thing is, right now, on November 5th. Is it November 5th? I don't know whatever it is. Number two for name an all NBA player. It's not happening. Like, they're not getting Beal, Booker,
Devin Booker,
Simmons, whatever names you want. Then the trade back deals are all sort of mostly unsexy to me. Like, we've gone through all of them. They're just like, they help your current team a little bit because you get a veteran, but you sacrifice a lot of draft equity. It just does not, it's not like, I haven't found one that I think is both realistic and worth the Golden State's while. Drew Holiday is really interesting because in my gut, if I'm the Warriors, I do not give up the number two pick for Drew Holiday by himself. Okay? And that sounds weird because Drew Holiday's really freaking good. And if the Warriors got him, yeah, they'd have a logjam of guards, whatever. Talent is talent. They'd be really, really good. They're already really good. They'd be even better. And they're trying to win a championship. I just think even in a draft that people are kind of down on the guys at the top, this and that, the number two pick is such a precious chance, such a rare chance for a dynastic team, and that's what the Warriors still are, to do what the Spurs did with Kawhi Leonard, except you are drafting at a place where it's much more reasonable to get a star talent at number two. It's so precious and so rare that I can't trade it for even someone as good as Drew Holiday, because he's a tier below the guys we just mentioned before. He's 30, so he's not a bridge to anywhere to me. He's about as old as my core guys. And he's never made an All-NBA team. Like, he's really good. I just can't give up the number two pick alone for that, which is why if I get 13 back and I give you Wiggins, which I have to do anyway to match salaries, Drew Holiday's too big for my trade exception. And I've seen John Hollinger, our old friend, throw in the Minnesota pick that the Warriors have next season.
I think that Minnesota pick, Zach, is more valuable than number two.
Well, here's the thing. There's no way they're trading both of those picks in any deal for Drew Holiday. 0% chance. I shouldn't say zero. 2% chance, even if you get Redick back. So I just think they're not trading both of those picks without – that's their chance at a bridge player. They're not sacrificing both chances at a bridge player. Maybe they can talk themselves into exactly what you just said. The Minnesota pick is going to be just as good of a chance to find that bridge player. Drew Holiday is really good. If we get off of Wiggins, which do they think of Andrew Wiggins that way? Maybe they don't. I mean, Andrew Wiggins is a wildly divisive player in the NBA. And get the 13th pick back. And maybe this is one of those drafts where to us, 13 is as good as 6 or 8 or 5. Like, just simplifying it to 2 and Wiggins for Holiday and 13. I think that's one that we have a lot of meetings about. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you're bringing in your head of scouting. and I'm asking you, how good can James Wiseman or Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball or any of these guys, where are they, 2 years from now or a year from now? It's funny, Zach, I did a study. I got excited when I was seeing all these touchscreens on CNN and all these things. So I said, you know what? I'm going to do a study of color-coordinated draft picks. And what I did was I took the last 20 years and I broke these guys down by tiers. You know what the number two pick has produced in the last 20 years?
Well, the number two has been cursed like a Horcrux for like a while now. So I'm very interested to hear.
Yeah, it's produced 5 players. That one player who was a franchise player and 4 that were considered an all-star player. And that's it. 5 out of 20.
But if you look at number two, less is number two. And just like you get a pick in this range, like I bet number three, the return might be even better than number two. Or number four might be, if you just look for an isolated 15-year sample size, 2 or 3 really awful misses at number two can skew those numbers. Like, it's still massively valuable, but it's not the number one pick. The number one pick is a crown jewel all of its own. And maybe not this year, but on average, the number one pick is like exponentially more valuable than number three and even number two.
Yeah, the number one pick out of the last 20 years, 16 out of the 20 players are starter level plus, right? Like, that's a pretty good number. I mean, 9 are All-NBA/franchise. So it's a solid sample. And yeah, I get it. I agree with you that there has been some really bad misses at number two. So I think it's a discussion that you have. And I think it's, as I said, when we started it, it's something that you better trust your scouting department as far as where they think that player who you have as your number two guy on the board or number one guy on the board, where you think he's going to be 2 or 3 years. Because what happens is that Holiday probably opts out. Maybe we don't, we'll see where the cap comes in the luxury tax in 2021 and then beyond. And then you're going to pay, right? Then you're going to pay that player a substantial amount because you are not going to let him go considering what you just gave up.
This trade might be one where both teams have a hard time swallowing and making it, because to me, if I'm the Pelicans, depending on what I think of the draft, right? And I don't know what they think of the top three in the draft. That number two pick is probably going to trump anything else I can get as a singular asset for Jrue Holiday. It trumps Gary Harris. It trumps Caris LeVert, I think. And if that's the case, I've got to think hard about it. Even if I don't want Wiggins, and Wiggins is not a good fit with Ingram or Zion Williamson, maybe I reroute Wiggins down the line. Like, these are problems you can solve later. If I'm Golden State, I may get to go time on that trade and say, boy, number 13. I mean, you can look in your database right now. What's the average return for number 13? I'll tell you what it probably is. Back-end rotation guy.
Yeah.
now, you may have a guy you think at 13 is going to be your Kawhi Leonard or your, I mean, Kawhi Leonard's unrealistic, but your whoever, you know, really good starter, maybe. And Jrue Holiday, just like you said, is 30 on an expiring contract, and I'm going to have to pay him a lot of money starting next season. I wonder if both teams end up saying no to that, but that's the best Warriors Jrue Holiday trade that I could come up with. It's just really hard to find a way for the Warriors to move the number two pick and get everything they want for it.
Yeah. I mean, especially if we're taking, if we're not adding that Minnesota pick to the equation, right?
I mean, someone within the league today texted me, hey, there's a little bit of buzz about number two to San Antonio for LaMarcus Aldridge and number 11. And obviously there have to be salary going out.
Yeah.
And my response was, that's crazy. The Warriors should not do that. Like, you don't trade the number two pick for LaMarcus Aldridge. And I don't care if you're getting number 11. And to be clear, when I heard there was buzz about it, I started checking around. I don't think that's a real thing that the Warriors would do. But, like, this is the kind of – like, I just haven't found anything that moves me as the Warriors to trade that pick. Jrue Holiday comes pretty close as a veteran player. It still hurts, though.
No, you're right. I mean, I actually like your – when we talked – we did the podcast a couple of weeks ago, I liked your Sacramento proposal a lot better than what that San Antonio one.
At least that's what I said. Guys. I said I like my Kings one better, which, to be clear, was number two to Sacramento, who has number 12, which is a Kings pick, yeah. Nemanja Bjelica, Rashawn Holmes, and a top five protected future Kings pick, which is like a protected future Kings pick. The Kings screw everything up. You know, like, you're going to do that. Like, your biggest worry about that might be you don't get it because they're going to be picking so high in the draft. But I don't think they're going to do that. And I understand, because this is the number two pick. It's such a precious chance. And Bjelica is expiring and Holmes is expiring. And in the end, they're just guys. They're just fifth starters, off the bench guys. And number 12 is just a guy usually. And I get it. But I think this one made me pause in my tracks today and think hard about it. Let's talk about LeVert, because I do think, again, I could see this coalescing around the Denver offer that I mentioned, the Warriors deal that I just mentioned, and something revolving around Caris LeVert, i.e. Caris LeVert becomes the single best present-day player you can get for Jrue Holiday. What do you think of that? Does either team do it? What's your temperature take?
My temperature take is that if I'm New Orleans, I think he's probably one of – you probably have a chart as far as, you know, your A-level assets, your B-level, and your C-level. And I think he's probably in your A-level, but probably in that number 3 to 4 range. Probably not right up at the top there. But because he's under – his rookie extension hasn't even started yet. And you got him for 3 years, 51, on a really good deal. I mean, that's a good number. Yeah, I think that's something that I would think long and hard about. And I think if you're Brooklyn, how does LeVert play with a healthy Kyrie Irving? How does Jrue Holiday play with Kyrie? And then it goes back to that, you know, and I think if you're in the Nets, you mean there's no qualms that you're going to pay the guy So that's something I found. New Orleans, I would certainly, I would put that up high on my list of trades.
That's the one. That's a meeting where the Nets love LeVert. They've put so much institutional equity into helping him develop. They love him as a person and as a player. They've watched him come back from these devastating injuries, both in college and in the pros when he landed on his foot in Minnesota. You know, they just love the guy, and he's a really good player. And I actually think some of the fit issues that people have brought up with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are a little overblown. Like, he's about as good of a shooter as Drew Holiday by the numbers. People focus on the fact that he hasn't shot spot-up threes as well as he's shot pull-up threes. My take on that could be, if he's shooting like 38% on pull-up threes, like, that's actually encouraging to me. I think he's going to become a better spot-up three-point shooter. That doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, that he's like at 29 and 31 on catch-and-shoot threes. But because of his defense, and if you're going to play Kevin Durant at center, Kevin Durant's a great defensive player no matter – well, the Kevin Durant we saw pre-injury. But you're still going to need great perimeter defense because that's a small lineup. And I do think the Nets are going to toy with that lineup, maybe more than toy with it. I think they're going to try to use it a lot. You're going to need good perimeter defense, and Drew Holiday checks that box as in bold magic marker as much as anybody in the league. That's one where we have a lot of heart-to-hearts if I'm Sean Marks in his front office. And on the other side of it is, like, people just aren't asking, like, well, what does New Orleans want? I actually don't really have a feel for what New Orleans wants. Maybe they just want, like, four draft picks. Maybe that's what they want more than a young veteran player like Harris. I don't think LeVert's a great fit, frankly, for Ingram and Zion Williamson. But, you know, talent is also talent. And, again, you can figure out some of these things later. That's a tough one. But I could see this landing where LeVert is the best player they can get for Drew, the best present day player they can get for Drew Holiday.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if you, you know, now you bring in Stan Van Gundy into the equation also, right? So this is not a complete like rebuild in New Orleans. I think it's far from it. So you remove Holiday. It's like, you know, when you go through the trade process here, we always say like, you got to check each box, right? Young player, controllable contract, draft pick, expiring contract. You kind of mix all that in, and how do you get two out of three of those, right? How do you get a young player on a controllable contract and a draft pick out of that and still be competitive without really like wiping it clean? I mean, that's where you're looking at.
And if they don't love LeVert, and I don't know that they do, I don't know that they don't, but if they don't love him, Gary Harris – and Bol Bol, and you throw me a bounty of draft picks, that might be, you know, the draft picks just aren't going to be very good if they're Denver's own picks. I mean, that team is slated to be really good for a long time. So that's you're really betting up on some improbable event that makes those picks in 1 year better than they appear to be. You know, that might be the best you can get. I mean, there'll be other teams to try to get involved. I think Atlanta would look at flipping its sixth overall pick in this draft for Drew Holiday. I don't really think that lights my fire if I'm David Griffin, but maybe it does. There's been some, like, maybe Miami. I just don't see that at all because I don't see them throwing Tyler Hero into a Drew Holiday deal. Tyler Hero, to me, is the way I talked about that number two pick for the Warriors. I'm if I'm trading him at all, it's for a super-duper star, not quite Drew Holiday. There's been some Dallas, a lot of Dallas noise. Like, Dallas just says noise about Dallas. They're trying, they're hunting. Like, do you see any path to Drew Holiday for them?
I don't, especially with those two picks going out to New York. So you're basically restricted as far as from a draft standpoint. And if you know, certainly take Luka off and, you know, Porzingis, right? You have a nice set of role players on good contracts. Like, so what is that actually?
Well, they have the 18th pick.
Right.
And they have
31, right?
Yeah, Golden State second round pick. I think Dallas is going to try to get involved. Like, I bet they're one of the teams that's already contacted the Pelicans about Drew Holiday. Because, again, he's an expiring. So if Giannis decides, I want to go to Dallas in the offseason, well, it's fine. You can let Drew Holiday walk. You haven't sacrificed any cap room. You've had a really good season, presumably, because you traded for him. I get that. I just don't see enough there, even with all the draft equity. A guy who's similar in terms of being an expiring, that if he became available, I could see Dallas trying to throw some stuff at, is Oladipo. Because Oladipo, people right now, sight unseen, or last time we saw him was in the bubble, not looking very good. are like wildly uncertain about what he is going forward as a player. Like, is he a star? Is he an all-star? Is he just a guy? Is he like an average starter? We don't know. You know, if you wanted to take a shot at him, like, I don't think Indiana's, if they ever move to trade him, is getting like a bounty for him. So like number 18 plus number 31 plus like these really good role players who are under control for several years for the most part, who would help any team, like, that's not a terrible offer for the Pacers. I don't know that they do it, but it's not terrible, especially for a small market team that, like, yeah, it's valuable to us to have Seth Curry or Maxi Kleba or Dorian Finney-Smith under good contracts for, like, 2 and 3 seasons.
It's the Rudy Gay trade. Remember back in Toronto moved him to Sacramento?
Yep.
Right? Like, that changed their, that changed their season around, where you basically brought back three players that helped you stay competitive, and it gave you kind of a – it gave you, balanced the roster out. It gave you more of a foundation than with Rudy and his contract. And it's not always, it's kind of like that singles type trade where you're getting, you're sending out your star on an expiring, and you're getting two to three serviceable players that fit your puzzle, right? That's kind of like that type of trade.
A lot of Lakers Clippers stuff.
Yeah, I don't see it. I don't see it, Zach. I mean, like, the Lakers, like, I get it. You know, they're linked to a lot of different things, but, you know, LeBron, AD off the board. Now we're looking at, you know, your picks are going to New Orleans. Now we're looking at like Danny Green and Kyle Kuzma, right? Those are your, probably your, you know, your number one and
unless,
two.
Unless the Pelicans have been lusting over Kyle Kuzma as the Laker that got away.
Well, and then here's the other thing. Like, why are you going to do, you have the Lakers pick. Why are you going to make them better, right? Why are you going to make those picks, you know, better than maybe you could be? So, like, I'm not, like, if I'm New Orleans, like, that doesn't appeal to me. And then you look at the Clips. I mean, you're looking at, I mean, all your picks are going to OKC, right? So your picks, your swaps, you got nothing in the kitty there. You're looking at Lou Williams, Zubac, Landry Shamet, guys like that, to try to get the, you know, guys, Patrick Beverley, Rodney McGruder, guys that try to, you know, get that number up to, you know, 20 and change to stand out. I don't either.
Just don't see it. I don't see it for either team. You know, you can sell me on, again, the way you make up the talent deficit in these trades is, like, I don't have a LeVert, I don't have a whoever, is just load up picks. And these teams can't load up picks because they've already loaded up a bunch of picks in other deals. And, you know, I just don't think Kyle Kuzma has that kind of juice. I just don't. And Zubac has trade value because that contract is outrageously good. He's a legitimately good starting NBA center. It's just, center is a position I'm not, like, super, like, worried about if I'm the Pelicans, because Zion's going to play some there. Jackson Hayes is in his second year, is probably going to be ready for more consistent rotation role at least. And if I there's a thousand centers who are free agents this summer and no money for them at all, like, I'll be able to poach a Tristan Thompson or whoever for the minimum, or maybe not Tristan Thompson for the minimum, but actually maybe, or somebody like that for the tax mid-level or half.
Yeah, Derek Favors, right?
You might. Right. I've got his bird rights still. Yeah. Like, I've just got a lot of avenues to stop gaps that I just don't, I don't see. I mean, then you could start, well, they could do three team trades and this and that. Then it just gets too complicated. I just don't see a path for the LA teams to get him. Nor do I see a path for the Bucks. The Bucks, I'm sure, would love to get in on Jrue Holiday. I don't see it. Bledsoe is an awful fit with Ingram and Williamson, and the rest of the stuff they have is not interesting. And, you know, any other teams stand out to you?
No, I mean, we hit on them all. I mean, that's kind of, it's like your process of elimination, right? Like, you just eliminate, you know, you eliminate the teams that he would never, he would likely not resign with. Right. So you take out teams like probably, you know, the Detroits of the world, the Charlottes of the world, who don't need a guard, who are not going to give up the house for him. I mean, that's kind of what we went through. The Denvers, the Brooklyns, that is kind of where your focus is.
Does Philadelphia take a shot with Josh Richardson? You got to put Thybulle in. Has to be in. Yeah. Zaire Smith, a future for, I mean, you're giving up all your youth. But, you know, I just don't see Daryl doing that. I don't see, it's too soon on the job for him. He'd be a great fit there. And I don't see New Orleans touching Horford or Tobias Harris. I don't see that as like a big first move for the Sixers. Am I anything?
Yeah, there's besides the Richardson contract, there's not another like $12 million guy.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, it's almost like what Boston's probably going to go through with, you know, besides Marcus Smart's number, like they're so top heavy in contracts. There's like, he's really their only guy. So when you have, then you start, you know, with Richardson, Tybal, Smith, Mike Scott, right? Like you just like, you're getting to like $18, $19 million. You're still a little bit short. How do you get up to there without one of your bigger contracts?
All right. Well, I'm out of Jrue Holiday trades. I would love to be a fly on the wall in the Warriors. There is no war room. Maybe there is a war. I can't keep track of who's like going to the office.
And their virtual room. How about their virtual room?
Yeah. Maybe I could hack into it somehow. That'd be exciting.
We'd be doing this podcast from Leavenworth.
Yeah. I guess I shouldn't joke about that. And then, of course, we have the dynamic of Charlotte at number three. And one of the bigger mysteries in the league right now is how badly do they want James Wiseman?
Can I say something about Charlotte?
And the city, the people, the food? What do you want to talk about?
The team. So I saw a report, and I think Rick Bunnell from The Observer is the best. I think he's one of the – I mean, he's been around forever and stuff. And Rick wrote a report about LaMelo, right, about how he's not interviewed that well. And it certainly could be true, and I'm sure it is because Rick has great sources and stuff like that. But I spent a lot of time with LaMelo. He's one of my, I guess, stable of prospects that I've helped prepare for the draft. So I'm going to go out on a limb on LaMelo Ball here. He is a 18, 19-year-old kid who has not had much structure in his life, but loves to play basketball, right? That is one thing you cannot take away from this kid, that he loves to play basketball. So I get it. Maybe he didn't interview well with Charlotte and maybe he didn't want to be there and stuff like that. But I don't think there's, you know, certainly you can do your game study on him, but from a personality standpoint, I don't think there's a risk at all if Charlotte takes him at three that this kid's going to come here and be a pain in you know what there.
Interesting. So what does preparing for the draft mean?
You know what? So I've had the opportunity, and it's been about 4 years, so post Nets life, where I work with prospects as far as how they interview. And it started with Jason Tatum and Jonathan Isaac, you know, 3 years ago or 4 years ago. And this year it's been about 45 players. And we sit down and we go through an hour and a half mock interview, basically 50 questions, rapid fire on everything. And it's just to put these players in a comfort level when they do meet with teams. And I'm not afraid to call them out if I think they're acting like a you-know-what. But it's more of just I call it the open book on their life from chapter 1 to 20. And it's basically just telling the truth about everything that's happened in your life. And I had the opportunity you know, with LaMelo here, and I had no idea. I had never met the kid before, but I liked him. I mean, like, I liked him because there's a lot of joy about playing the game. He's not treating it like a job here.
Did you meet the father?
LeVar? I did not. No, I did not.
I've never met LeVar. The interview thing is so interesting because, you know, what team, I mean, you can speak to this more than I do, but when I talk to teams, what they want is some combination of confidence.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not scared of the NBA, mm-hmm. but the right level of confidence, like, I don't think I'm going to walk in and be a 25-point scorer, and some signal that you really truly care about winning. Like, winning is what is going to drive you. Whatever drive you have, whatever confidence you have, whatever arrogance you have, it is going to be directed to helping your team win. And some guys show that through how they perform in drills. Some guys show that through stories they tell in interviews. Some guys fake it and teams try to see through it, or maybe they don't. Some guys just don't answer the questions very well. They give one word answers and stuff like that. But it's very, do you go take them through any of the dumb riddles that teams throw at players?
No, I don't do the one, you know, hey, we're in a room and how many tennis balls can fit in here, right?
What is, like, I just don't understand the point of that. Like, yes, you're testing their creative thinking.
I think Daryl, that was a Daryl one in Houston.
Asked me how many golf balls could fit in this office, I would be like, I don't know, 50,000. I mean, I literally have no idea. Like,
you know, like the, one question, Zach, that prospects are really naive about is the G League. And what I ask them is, there, unless you are the number one or two pick, there will probably be a time where you spend in the G League, right? And if I am the general manager and I'm saying, hey, we're going on a road trip and we've got 4 and 5 nights and I don't have playing time, what's your response going to be when I say, you know, you got to go to the G League? And they're all over the place, right? Like, what's the G League? Can you talk to me about it? I've had some prospects say, well, don't draft me. And then I got to pause the interview and say, like, wait a minute here. Like, all right, now I'm talking to you as an advisor, not as a, you know, team. And it's a lot of it is educating these players about the G League and how guys like Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam and Duncan Robinson and Kendrick Nunn have paid their dues and kind of where they are right now.
That's really interesting. It's really interesting.
We could do a whole podcast on it. We could.
Well, let's go back to Charlotte for a second now. Because let's say they want Wiseman. Let's just say they do. I think they do want a big guy one way or another, whether it's trade, free agency, draft. I think they'd like to draft to get a big guy. Maybe they're afraid Golden State's going to take him at 2. Even if you don't think Minnesota is going to take him, you're afraid Golden State's going to take him. So that leads me, if I'm Gerson Rosas, to call Mitch Kupchak and be like, well, what are you going to give me? What are you going to give me? And I Minnesota's first pitch at that is probably going to be exorbitant. Like Miles Bridges, number 3 pick, at least one future lightly protected first-round pick, maybe 2. And I just don't know that Charlotte is really going to pay that price. I don't know that they care enough about James Wiseman to pay that price. Maybe they do, but here's where I end up. If you're Minnesota and you just don't care, right? You don't care who you don't want Wiseman and you just don't really care who falls to you at 3. If you trade back to 3, you just don't care. Shouldn't you get something? Shouldn't you just do the deal, even if it's just Miles Bridges or even if it's just one pick or so? Like, you should just get an extra thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like the Philly-Boston trade, right? When Boston was sitting at 1 and Philly moved up to take Fultz.
They got one pick.
And they got the Sacramento pick.
Yeah, which ended up being number 13 or something like that.
Yeah, and so if you are, and knowing Gerson, like, you know, they'll ask for a lot. I mean, it's the Daryl Morey school of executives that you ask for a lot. And if you move from 1 to 3 and you think that your player that you like at 1 is going to be there, then you move back in a draft and at least you get something.
For the ones who get it done. Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast, the truth is all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning, wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can. If that's a 10-minute low impact class, they've got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey, learn the basics, and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Can I ask you a question about one team that we haven't talked about yet?
Sure.
It's definitely one of my 3 or 4 most intriguing teams of the coming off season. What is Phoenix going to
do? I knew you were going to ask me about that. And this is where I wish, Zach, that free agency was before the draft. Okay?
Why does Phoenix here's why.
If I was Phoenix and free agency was from before the draft, I would move Ricky Rubio and a future pick to Atlanta and go out and make a monster offer to Fred VanVleet and pair him with Devin Booker. That's what I would do. How do I do that, though? Maybe you can still do it because the draft has already happened. You got free agency. You know what the cap number is going to be. You can still do that. You can even go out and do that if you clear your Dario Saric's and your decline the option on Kaminsky and don't bring back Aaron Baines, I think you might be able to, you know, get to 16, 17
which by
million.
Which, by the way, leaves you with one traditional big man on the team.
That's right. That's
maybe
that's
two if you include Diallo, who we actually kind of like and they, I think they should keep. But
yeah. But yeah, I mean, Phoenix is interesting because it feels like they're in that little bit of that honeymoon period, right? You're kind of living off what you did in Orlando. And honestly, I don't think that's good enough in the Western Conference, especially on a 72 game season, not on a 8 seeding games.
Well, I think they're under enormous pressure to build on that. I mean, Robert Sarver has never made any secret of the fact that he's desperately wants to get back to the playoffs. And now there's buzz. Devin Booker turned whatever corner people thought he had to turn. I already thought he was kind of rounding it, but he turned it. Ayton looked fantastic in the bubble. Cam Johnson as a stretch four was great. They didn't even have Kelly Oubre. I just think that they are in a position to do lots of different things. So if you just what you just said, if they just renounce Saric, and by the way, halfway through last season, it looked like of course they're going to renounce Saric. Then in the bubble, he becomes a hugely valuable.
He found his role.
There.
He stretch found his
five,
role.
Stretch yeah. five off the bench. Baines was, you know, remember we're not that long ago, the long way from the halcyon days of is Aaron Baines better than DeAndre Ayton? Should Aaron Baines just be the permanent starter here? Like that's how good he was at the start of last season. Kaminsky, I could take or leave. If they just do that and keep Rubio, they can get to like 17 million in cap room or 15 million yeah. in cap room or something like that. The reason why Rubio is a hot name right now is exactly what you just mentioned. If they want to do something big, they can get off of him and have lots of cap room. And I keep looking at the name Kelly Oubre.
Yeah.
As just such an interesting name this offseason, because if they moved him, I think a lot of contending teams would view him as a valuable player, like a three-ish and D wing. Okay. Three is not quite consistent, but he can score it. I think they'd view him as a valuable player, and in doing so, you could clear off his salary and open up lots of different possibilities. And again, they didn't even have him in the bubble, and between Bridges and Cam Johnson, it didn't look like they missed him all that much. I just think that there's a lot of interesting moving parts here and a lot of interesting directions that they can go.
Yeah, I mean, when you signed Oubre last year to that 2 for 30, and then you factor in
he's expiring.
He's not expiring. And then when you factor in him not playing in Orlando, and then what you saw from Bridges and Johnson, he goes up on that, you know, most likely to be moved category here. And what can you get back for, in an expiring there? So they're interesting. I mean, like, you know, it's funny. I just finished this piece on. I went through all the general managers. History of during the night of the draft. And yeah, I mean, James Jones got crushed last year for the TJ Warren, right? I mean, like you traded TJ Warren in the 32nd pick for $1 million. Come on.
Well, and look, he got crushed for trading 6 for 11 in Saric, which ended up being Culver for Cam Johnson and Saric. And then there was the sloppiness of how they had to get off Josh Jackson. And, like, it was not well managed.
Well, because it cost them DeAnthony Melton, who's turned out to be a pretty nice player, right? Like, So
it was not what you would call optimal cap usage. But to your point, I'll lead you right into it. But.
Yeah, I mean, but at the end of the day, you have the assets now. I mean, you're saved by what Johnson was able to do, what Cam Johnson was able to do, and now with Bridges developing, and how Ayton has progressed, and now you have an All NBA player in you know Devin Booker. All that camouflages some of your prior mistakes here. So now you're sitting in this like you're kind of at that crossroads, right? You're like you see where the top eight is going to be, but you also know where you can be in the bottom six in the Western Conference.
And they also have. The 10th pick in the draft.
That's right.
You know, because despite going 8-0 in the bubble, the league kind of froze the lottery stuff. And so they're picking pretty high for a team that showed maybe – I mean, there's a lot of debate within the league about how much of that was real and how much of it was a little bit of fool's gold. And they had a couple games I remember where the other team sat some people or sat at least one key person or was without a key person. But it looked – I mean, it looked real, not totally real. Like, I don't think they're going to win 60 games or something, but it looked like they're going to be a team that should fight to make the playoffs, even in a loaded Western Conference next year. They just have a lot of tools to play with, a lot of directions they go. I just hope they're careful. like a couple of podcasts ago, I said they're my sneaky favorite Chris Paul destination.
Yeah.
And Chris Paul's only got 2 years left. Like, that's not super, like, it's a lot of money. But, like, I could, you could talk me into it. Like, Phoenix, let's make the playoffs, let's have some fun. Like, look what he just did in Oklahoma City with, a clearly inferior roster. I mean, I shouldn't say that. Oklahoma City had a good starting five, just not a lot of depth. But you bring him to Phoenix, like, if he plays like that, he just made all NBA. Like, that's a real team. A couple people have mentioned, well, maybe, is that maybe a Danilo Gallinari sign-and-trade destination? That's interesting. You know, I guess he's an upgrade. They looked fine with Cam Johnson as a stretch four. But, yeah, I guess maybe you'd like to a little more size. I don't know. You know, Gallo kind of looked not great in the playoffs, and his defense is eh. I just hope whatever they do, it's not, like, so irrationally exuberant. Like, don't give me flashbacks to the, wait, Phoenix signed Tyson Chandler? Like, what happened? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing you don't want is to – get into the playoffs as the eighth seed, and then all of a sudden for the next 10 years, you are back. You are back to where you once were. And then it just takes you forever to build out of that Western Conference. I mean, it will take you four. I mean, that conference is unforgiving there.
Everyone's trying to win. Literally everyone. Literally everyone. Any final thoughts, Mr. Marks?
Prepare. Get ready. Right? I mean, this thing's going to happen quick. I mean, we're going to get free agency right after the draft, likely, and we'll get training camp, and you're going to be seeing teams likely filling out their roster when training camp gets going here.
Yeah, it's going to be a wild, assuming this all goes through, as we talked about. Board of Governors, I haven't seen any news. I haven't gotten any texts. Maybe it's still going on. I'd get that'd be a pretty damn long meeting, but maybe it's still going on. I think the players will vote tonight, then we'll get some concrete news and we'll be ready to go. And there will be many more of these Drew Holiday type things everyone's got itchy trigger fingers, man. It's been 9 months since people made a trade.
It's been, you know, Marcus Morris, Andre Drummond that in February here, but it's going to be interesting because we never see outside of AD going, the handshake agreement before the draft last year. We don't really see much going before the draft, but man, we're in 2020. Who the heck knows what will happen once the starting gates are open.
We're assuming there's going to be a moratorium that's lifted before the draft, right? Like, I was talking to some people yesterday. No one quite knows when that will be. Like, how much runway are we going to get?
And just because, you know, if it's Thursday or Friday and there's agreement in place, I mean, they're going to need to put pen to paper here, and they're not lifting anything until they're, you know, everybody has signed off on it. And we know when player options are, guaranteed contracts, you know, everything, you know, when the trade deadline is going to be in probably in March. So there's a lot to get going here.
Well, try and get some sleep, Bobby. You know, my wife is pushing me to start the Queen's Gambit, you know, is in one of these like last nights of non-NBA craziness we have. I don't know. I'm not super into it, okay? I am into the Great British Bake Off, though. New episodes on Friday. Do you know which anonymous ESPN staffer I'm trying to browbeat into doing a Great British Bake Off podcast with me?
I'm outing
him right now. I'm outing him. I'm outing him, and I don't care.
Oh, it's not Kevin Arnovitz, is it?
No.
I mean, that's the easy choice. I don't Woj.
No, that would be like usual suspects level plot twist.
Who is it, Zach?
I'm outing him. Brian Windhorst. The world wants our joint British Bake Off, Great British Bake Off reviews. Okay, that's enough. I've reached silliness time. Mr. Marks, thank you very much. Stay safe down there in Florida. What the hell is going on in Florida anyway? That's a different podcast. Stay safe. Best of your family, my friend.
Thanks, Zach.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.